For almost 2 years, everywhere I went, a volume of the 5-volume discourses went with me, and I worked on the obvious things that needed to be done. And I was about half or two-thirds of the way through when I began to realize, good heavens, here are discourses and discourses on the subject of meditation. And at no time since I've been under Baba's thumb has he ever given me a meditation or a concentration. In fact, I could only recall one or two occasions when he had given rather simple and rather brief duration meditations to individuals close to him. So it struck me as strange that he should have spent so much time in the discourses on them, and yet effectively and practically to use meditation, to assign meditation so rarely. So the next time I got to India, I brought this up with Baba and said, how come, Baba? Well, Baba immediately looked deeply interested and smiled and waggled his head and said, well, Don, of course, I am the avatar, and I must provide for all of the 700 to 1400 years that go by after I drop the body until I come again. He said, during my life and for some time afterwards, and he didn't specify how long afterwards, he said, the high road of all roads for the spiritual aspirant is love. And during my lifetime and for some time afterwards, that road is fully open to the aspirant. He said, after that, gradually, the ability to use the path of love begins to be less and less available. And therefore, secondary techniques must start to be used. He said, one of the very best of those secondary ones is meditation, and so therefore I have to provide for it in great detail. However, during Baba's lifetime and for some time afterwards, it is a waste of time for the individual to use meditations. He should use all of his force, his energy, in utilizing this path of love that is fully open to him. Well, that was an extremely interesting clarification for me. I did forget to add one other thing when Baba was prodding me into reading his words, and which had led to the re-editing of the discourse project. When I was talking to Baba about how wonderful the discourses seemed to me on rereading, and that I felt that they would be virtually the Bible for the new, young, seeking generation that seemed to be coming along, Baba said, yes, there is a force, a spiritual force, in Baba's words, which is will be of great help to you and to the sincere spiritual aspirant. So you should work with Baba's words, and you should encourage. Baba used a stronger word than encourage. I've never been able to remember exactly the word. It was not as abrupt as to prod them, but it had that general significance, more than just to explain to them that they should, but, you know, really put one shoulder to the wheel and push on people to work with Baba's words. My own conclusion through the course of the years is that it's obvious from everything that I have seen with people who do work sincerely, concentratedly, and over a period of time with Baba's words, that in some fashion he does attach a strong spiritual energy to his words, and in some fashion, which I, of course, would not be able to fathom, the spiritual aspirant taps into that spiritual energy. Certainly, Baba's words must not be looked upon as some sort of an intellectual or a philosophical exercise. To look at them in that fashion is to belittle and grossly to undervalue their purport. I would even go so far as to say that it's my conviction that if an individual reads Baba's words, even if he does not understand the concepts that he is reading. Still, he taps effectively into that spiritual force. It is another mechanism of tapping into a deep energy level of the avatar himself. I think this brings us up to about the 1960 period when Baba allowed me to come to India to spend quite a chunk of vacation. Meanwhile, I'd become very close to a young English fellow, Alan Ewell, who was finishing his education in The Hague, and Alan had become very much interested in Mayor Baba. So when I had Baba's permission to come to India for my annual holidays, I wrote and asked if I could bring Alan along. I felt it would be the making of the base, of the making of the base for his life. So Baba promptly wrote back and said, yes, bring him along. Well, at that time, when I tried to set out, it was one of those absolutely typical Baba putting up every barrier. I was in the middle of an important petroleum negotiation, one of the most important of the whole year, taking place in Paris. It was supposed to have been ended off in October or early November, and here it was early December and still going on. And I was supposed to get to India roughly about the middle of December. There was to be one or two public gatherings, which I was to address as a Baba lover. So it was quite a state occasion. But day by day, these negotiations in Paris got more and more snarled up. I had to send Baba a letter and a telegram and so on, explaining the complications. There was nobody I could leave it with the negotiations. My people in San Francisco just emphasized that it had to be done before I could go off on holidays. And finally, I even had to break the first of the public engagements in Bombay. It was really quite a mess because it was done at the last moment. Some of the people actually were headed for Bombay and arrived there and expecting to hear me speak in the evening, simply had to go back home with the announcement that I'd been unexpectedly delayed and a new date was put. It was a real mess. Then getting off, finally, I think it was Christmas Eve, trying to leave Europe. We had to put down in Rome, I believe actually change planes, perhaps spend the night, as I recall. There was a torrential rainstorm, and in all of the excitement at the airport in Rome, one plane coming in to land forgot to put down its landing gear, stalled, naturally, right in the middle of the main runway. It was a huge plane. So they tried, I think it was something like 2 days with enormous cranes before they finally, in all of this driving rainstorm, finally managed to lift that airplane off of the runway. And I think it was at that point that it was Christmas Eve and all. Lots of the airplanes had very reduced schedules. Finally, we managed to get to Karachi, had Christmas dinner in a Karachi hotel. That was the time when things were very touchy between Pakistan and India. But we were still able to get a plane on Christmas Day to go to Bombay. I held the very belated public address in Bombay. It was a wonderful occasion for me, very enjoyable. And then finally managed to get up, I suppose a week, 10 days late, to Ahmednagar. Well, Baba was really quite irritated. I think he said something to me, Don, if you had been one more day late, I would have canceled the whole thing. You know, when Baba says things like that to you get absolutely, absolutely crushed. So, at any rate, that was on this occasion that Baba rather belatedly washed the feet of lepers, which is shown in a 1960 film, in celebration of Mary's birthday, also celebrated late. I remember driving with Bobby in the car to and back from the location where the leper's feet were to be bathed. And it was on this occasion when Baba, sitting in the front seat, turned around and gestured so Arish could see his gestures, and he made this beautiful comment, Don, as the avatar, I have many responsibilities and duties, of course, but of all of them, there is none that touches me more deeply than bowing down to and washing the feet of the lepers. They are like beautiful birds caught in an ugly cage. This was so typical of the beauty and of the grace that one absorbed constantly from Baba, and the magnificence of his sharing it with one was really touching. It was also on one of these drives that an amusing little incident came up. I've never really known the solution to it, but I've often thought of it. That was the period when Yogiji, a yogi who was a great deal around Baba in those days, dressed in saffron. One very often sees a picture of him. He had short beard and goatee. Loved Baba enormously and deeply. In fact, I think he's still alive. I believe he is from the Madras area with quite a large following. At any rate, he accepted Baba totally as the avatar and regarded him as, of course, the spiritual master, not only for himself, but all of his followers. It was on one of these occasions, Yogiji was in the car, and Baba was there, and somewhere or another, I think Alan Yule started saying a few words of French to me for some reason or another. And Yogiji brightened up and said, "Oh, you speak French? I speak French, too." Well, that was sort of amusing. So both Alan and I tried out our French on Yogiji to see what he would do. And actually, he was quite proficient. But all of a sudden, Baba turned around from the front seat and looked rather wrathful and says, "No, change over into English. How do you expect Baba to understand French?" Or words to that general sort. I think this brings us up to about the point of a great holiday that Baba allowed me to spend in India in February of 1962. I'm going to send along my day-by-day notes on that. I took them down because as soon as I arrived, in fact, I think it had been already agreed to on a previous trip, that the next time I came, it would be wise to take motion picture shots, especially around Sitara, where Baba had spent so much time before the monsoon seasons each year, up until the point where the Maharani of Baroda had given him her home in Pune to stay. So Sitara, Mahabaleshwar, Panchgani are all associated very deeply with Baba. They stayed in many houses, especially at Sitara. Some of those were falling into ruin. Some had already been removed, apparently. And Baba and Mani and Mara had concluded that the next time I came, it would be a good thing to have sort of a major film, and especially to get shots of so many of these beloved historical spots. At any rate, as soon as I arrived at Pune, where I was to be met by Dr. Duncan and Karian Joseph Harb, I started taking notes day by day. I'll send those along. You can make whatever use you want of them. There are a few little things that I haven't covered completely as I would like to, in those notes. It was a custom, or rather it became a custom, with Monty and Mara that when it became quite certain that I was coming, they noted that Baba would allow motion picture scenes to be taken of him, but normally he would resist rather heavily. So in the days just before I would arrive, the two of them would start putting pressure on Baba. Baba, wouldn't it be lovely if we could get some film shots of so-and-so while Don is here? And Baba, what about doing that and such other sort of thing? It'd be wonderful to have those recorded. So the film in 1960, for instance, which was taken when Alan Ewell and I were there, was pretty much 100% scenarioed by Mara and Monty in advance. 1962 was to be the great high spot, and they wanted to make the film of all films, and I even heard almost immediately on my arrival that, wonder of all wonders, Baba had consented to take up his drum, which he had played as a young man and hadn't played since he was in his mid or late 30s. He'd consented to take it up and play on it and allow the filming to occur. Quite frankly, for Baba to agree to such a wholehearted Hollywood type of an event really amazed me. And it wasn't until almost the last day when this great event of all events was to take place that I began to understand some of the byplay that Baba intended. Baba has always quoted, or had quoted, to anyone and everyone on all occasions various of the verses of Hafiz. And he had been talking about Hafiz at quite some length in the earlier parts of this day. And incidentally, various different filmings were going on, different scenes which are all recorded and still preserved in the February 1962 film taken at Mehrazad. Well, primarily at Mehrazad, but also at Sitara, Mahabaleshwar, again the Ellora and the Ajanta Caves, and then finally on a trip which Baba spent an enormous amount of time planning out, especially with Dr. Duncan, up into especially the Rajasthan area. As I say, that film is scenarioed, the Mehrazad part, by Mara and Monty, and the things that were to be filmed, especially at Sitara, were specified by Baba. And then the trip that he sent me on afterwards to Jaipur and the Dilwara temples and Amber were all scripted by Baba himself. So, at any rate, the great high point of this occasion was to be Baba playing on his drum, and he decided that he would play on his drum to accompany an Arti record, which was based on the verses of Hafiz. Well, this is marvelous. Everybody was anticipating it, and how marvelous it would be to have Baba on film finally playing his drum. Nothing like this had ever occurred. There was really an air of tension and an anticipation in the air, day by day, increasingly, as we got to the fatal day. Well, the day before, we would always prepare a little bit what was going to go on and be filmed on the following day. So late in the afternoon, after Baba had left Mandalay Hall, Monty came running around the side and into Arish's cabin and said, Don, something we need to discuss with you. Baba has decided that the filming tomorrow will be done in the living room of the main house. because that's where the phonograph is, and there's a nice, comfortable couch, and that's where he would like to have it. Well, I'm not a great film expert, but those were the days when there was absolutely no electricity at Mehr Azad. It was before the days when they had these battery packs from which you could light a floodlight where you had insufficient light. In other words, all I had was a reasonably good 16-millimeter camera and normal daylight colored film. Or at least I thought I had daylight colored film. But actually, when I'd left Europe, I'd been unable to get as much daylight colored film as I wanted, and so I had to settle for about one-third quantity of colored film, which is to be taken under artificial light without a filter. So when I looked in my pack early that day, I found that I'd used up all my normal daylight film and had only the artificial light colored film left. That was a problem, first of all. And secondly, then I discovered that I'd forgotten to bring along the little filter attachment for the objective to correct in case one used the artificial light film in normal sunlight. So I was really sweating it out, but thinking, well, the worst that can happen, I suppose, is that Baba looks all blue while he's playing the drum. But then when Monty came around and said it's going to take place in the living room, I remembered, my gosh, that living room has one small window at one end, which goes through a thick wall out to the sunshine. The sofa is almost at the opposite end of the living room. In front of it, there is a large window, but it goes out onto a verandaed porch, and overhanging all of the verandaed porch is an enormous tree. So I just felt a sickening in my heart and said, Monty, if you don't mind, can I go in and get a light reading? But I just don't think we stand a chance to have enough light there. So Monty looked very crestfallen, and she said, all right, I'll tell the ladies to get out so that you can come in. That was still in the days, you know, when Baba wouldn't allow, especially Mara, to be seen by men. So I her signal went in with my light meter, and which was adjusted to my absolute maximum opening of the objective. Went in to see what sort of a reading I would get. And my gracious, the light meter not only didn't go to the minimum reading, it just didn't budge. It was right down on the basement, ground, bottom floor. Absolutely no indication of light. So I just felt absolutely sick at heart. I went over by the small window, and even there, there was no light. Even if we could push the couch over there, if Baba would stand still for that and try to take the film, there was just no way that we could do it. So Monty came back around to Erich and said, well, Don, how did it look? And I said, Monty, there's just absolutely no hope. I said, what are we going to do? Can you get Baba to go out doors? So they said, well, leave it with us, and we'll try. We'll see what we can see. Well, the next news bulletin was that both Money and Mara had worked and used all their siren powers of suasion on Baba. But Baba was absolutely adamant. That was the ambiance that he wanted. He was going to sit on the couch. The phonograph would be right next to him. Don was to sit directly at his feet, and Don could take whatever pictures he wanted. Well, you know, when you have your objective completely open, there's a certain minimum distance that you've got to be from the object that you're filming, or it's all blurred. So here we were, absolutely no light, the wrong sort of film, and Bob insisted that I stay so close that at most I might get a picture of his knee at one point and his stomach at another and an ear at another, but no pictures of the whole of Baba or even the half of Baba. Well, I explained to Monty that we were just in a hopeless quandary, and Monty just shook her head and said, Don, we just must do it. This is the first time Baba has ever agreed to take up his drum and to be filmed. And even if you just get a little hazy, faint outline, it'd be better than nothing. So I agreed. Well, I went to sleep, and the next day, when it was time for all this to go on, there was a quick checking, and it appeared that Baba was still absolutely adamant. So I loaded myself up with all of the artificial light film that I had, and finally the scene was all laid. Baba in a light sadra was sitting on the couch looking absolutely stunning and radiant. And I tried to sit maybe 2 or 3 feet away from him, but no, he wanted me actually touching the spot where his feet were. I guess he wanted actual physical contact to try to boost up the voltage of Stevens a little bit. So he said, have you got your film already? And I said, yes, Bob. I knew he already knew, but I didn't think it was possible. So he said, go ahead then. All right, you take the film and we'll play Hafiz, and Baba will play on the drums, and then Baba will explain to you what Hafiz is saying. So off we went, and I started cranking on the camera, and Baba tamped away on the drum in just an absolutely exquisite fashion. It was lovely, and suddenly Baba motioned down with his hand, and Arish turned off Hafiz for a few minutes, and Baba described what Hafiz had said in the last 2 or 3 verses, and I filmed this and ran out of my pack and put in another one, started cranking again, and Baba picked up his drums and played, and Hafiz was being sung enchantingly, and on it went. I just cranked in package after package of films, cassettes they were, so they were quite readily exchanged, and then, finally, that beautiful, beautiful episode was done, and I had just a horrible sinking of heart, feeling, well, there was one of the great opportunities of all time for filming Baba, and here it had to be gone and muffed. So at any rate, I tried to look cheerful and said how lovely it had all been and how much I appreciated Baba's grace and the beauty of his drumming and his comments, and went out, and Monty came racing around, and we compared notes, and I said, Monty, there was no chance, absolutely no chance. Bob insisted on sitting right there. He insisted I sit right touching his feet, and there we are. There was no light, and everything was wrong. So Monty looked very crestfallen and said, well, Mayor and I will do our best, and maybe some way we can get him to take his drums outside tomorrow. When I woke up the next morning, and there was the hasty checking on what was going to go on. Well, lo and behold, overnight, Mara and Monty had prevailed on Baba, and he had agreed to take his drum out underneath the trees in front of Mondeley Hall. There wasn't the porch overhang at that point, just trees and pleasant, and Baba said that he would play for a little bit. So we got all arranged, the scenario fine, and then Baba said to Francis, Francis, play one of your, sing one of your songs, one of your new songs. I can't quite remember how it all happened. Maybe Francis didn't know the music or something, but he decided to sing a hillbilly song. He started singing that, and Baba chuckled and tamped a little bit on his drums, but nothing of the beautiful, loving preoccupation with which he had played on his drums to accompany Hafiz's verse on the day before. Well, Francis got to the end of it and looked pleased, and Bob said, do it again. And Francis looked shocked and horrified, and so off he went into his song again. Baba tamped on it, but I must say, Baba was a real ham that afternoon. It just had none of the verve and the enthusiasm, and I thought, well, but at any rate, we'll see Baba with the drum on his knees and a couple of tamps, and at least we'll have that for posterity. And then Baba put it down and began talking about Francis's new book, For Whom the People Sing. Gosh, I guess that's not quite the right title, but you can find out what it is. And it had been printed on some of the first paper turned out in Mayor G's new paper plant. And Don ought to buy 100 copies and take them back with him by airplane. And Don was wondering where he was going to get the money at that point to buy 100 copies and how he would get all this lugged into his already overweight luggage to carry back. But, you know, these things have a way of adjusting themselves. So here I was, scrambling hither and scrambling yon in order to catch a few more shots of Baba with the Mondoli. Wonderful occasion, wonderful series of shots there. And then Baba started looking annoyed with Don running around from all angles and saying, haven't you shot enough? And I said, well, Baba, you promised I could take as many films today as I wanted from wherever I wanted. So Baba shut up at that point for a little while, and then finally he just got downright annoyed. And just as my last film ran out, he said, Don, that's enough. Baba's tired of being filmed. Well, those films went down with me to Bombay for special treatment by Kodak, rush treatment. And I practically prayed on my knees with the people in Bombay Central Office of Kodak to try somewhere or another to bring out these films that I knew had almost no chance taken in the living room with Baba and his drum. And they said, well, Mr. Stevens, it's absolutely impossible. We simply cannot change all of our processing methods. We'll try to do what we can, but you mustn't expect too much. Off I went on my trip, and when I got back from seeing these magnificent things that Baba had outlined, went to see Moinuddin Chisti's tomb. Baba said he was the great Sufi perfect master of India. And as I had been initiated by Murshid Martin, I must go visit his tomb. And then on to these superb white marble temples, Dilwara temples, up at Mount Abu to the north of Ahmedabad, where all of these things, as I found out later from Arish, have been so intricately interwoven into Baba's life and various travels that he had made. So, at any rate, I got back to Bombay, rushed over to Kodak, and meanwhile, Mayor G had made arrangements with one of the Baba lovers who owned a film shop to let me view them on a little editor machine. So I broke out the four cassettes, or the films from the four cassettes that I'd taken in the living, put them on the editor, started cranking them off, and I have never had such a total surprise in all of my life. Here was Baba, perfectly illuminated, radiant, the shots taken as if I had been at least 5-10 feet away, absolutely as if the best technical experts in Hollywood had worked over the set for 2 weeks before to make certain that there were no shadows or anything, and here was Bob in all his glory, and I realized why he had been so desultory and uninterested as he had tamped on his drums to accompany Francis on the following day. There were so many things that happened on that particular occasion. It was one of the great ones with Baba. I remember one other which sounds a bit horrifying in the telling, but which taught me an awful lot. That was rather early in the occasions. Baba had just been coming out of quite some odd months of seclusion, and he had allowed the Bhajan singers from Ahmednagar to come on the day that he officially broke his seclusion. Now, meanwhile, Arish and I had developed a bit of a pleasant little habit just after breakfast in the morning to walk in a leisurely fashion out beyond the front gate and way out to where the private road joins the public road and then walk back, and it'd be usually half three quarters of an hour after that that Baba would come out from the main house and sit in Mondoli Hall with the men Mondoli. That was lovely. On this occasion, as I said to Arish after breakfast, well, are you ready for our morning walk, Arish? And he said, Don, I'm not sure. you know, the Bajan singers are coming this morning, and we mustn't run the risk of being late for the session with Baba. I looked at my watch and said, well, that's set for 10 o'clock, isn't it, Arish? And it's only 9 o'clock now. We've got lots of time. Well, Arish looked a little bit sheepish and said, well, you're probably right. So why don't we do it? Well, we were not more than, let's say, halfway out to the public road. All of a sudden, Arish looked up and said, uh-oh, we've had it. Here was a truck coming down the road with a whole lot of Indian people in it. And he said, those are the Bajan singers. And I said, but good heavens, Arish, they're 20, 30 minutes early. And he said, yes, but everyone always has been taught by Baba not just to be on time, but early, and so they're following the rule. And I said, well, we better rush back, shouldn't we? And he said, no, it's too late. We might as well enjoy the rest of our walk. Well, we got back, actually, at 9:45, and there was Baba in the center of the free space out in front of Mandalay Hall with an accumulation of Mandalay and Bajan singers all around him. And if I've ever seen Baba look as if his eyes were flashing lightning, it was on that occasion. He looked at Arish and me and said, where have you been? Arish says, Baba, we took a walk. We usually do after breakfast. He said, why weren't you here when the Bajan singers arrived? And Arish says, well, Baba, you know, it was all supposed to start at 10 o'clock, and it's only 9:45 now. And Baba said, but you should have been here. You should know what Baba wants. And on Baba went, and on Baba went, and Arish tried a couple of little protests back to explain. I guess he was trying to protect Don or something of the sort. At any rate, Baba would interrupt angrily, and I was thinking, good heavens, what have I got poor Arish into? And thinking I really ought to bear some of the weight of this debacle, because it was Stevens who egged Arish into going in the first place, despite Arish's misgivings. So just as I had that thought, Baba rounded on me and gestured and said, Don, you have ruined my day. Well, to have ruined Baba's day and this very special day of all days, and to have this sort of criticism from the Avatar himself. I've always been very sensitive to criticism, and to have the Avatar in a storming rage say such a thing to me, it was just more than I could bear, and something inside of me just absolutely snapped and broke and foundered. And just as I knew that I could never feel the same again, Baba looked deeply, quietly, and steadily at me for about 5 seconds, snapped his fingers, and said, don't worry, let's have a good time. And that was it. Then after I'd recovered from that shock and felt back over that, I began to realize two things. One was that when the Avatar himself had absolutely sliced right into the middle of my feelings with the sharpest criticism I think I'd ever had, and from the person that I love most, and lived through it. Criticism since that time has never had the same impact. But the second thing that absolutely astonished me and was even more important to me was the manner in which the Avatar utilizes situations to do what is necessary. Doing anything in order to slice through, to eliminate a deep habit pattern, a deep sensitivity, a deep samskara that has to be gotten out of the way, and the total freedom that he himself enjoys from any sort of binding by emotions. There he turned on the most intense apparent anger, and 1 second later, there was absolutely no trace of it. So that was quite an object lesson. There was another situation that cropped up in 1965. when I arrived and was sitting in Harish's little cabin, first thing almost that happened was that money came running around the corner and into the door, and I said, "Oh, Don, I'm glad you're here because Baba had us put away a present for you." Well, a present. I was all agog, and so she ran off, and a few minutes later came back bearing a little manila envelope, and she said, "Open it." And inside of it was one of Baba's sadras, well-used, patched, obviously one that he had used many, many times. And she said, "Don, on the evening of January 14, 1965, that is, I was there in September, and that was, what, 8 months before, when Baba was going to bed and took off his sadra, he gave it to Mara and said, 'Save this for Don and give it to him the next time that he comes.'" Well, the next morning, or rather later in the day, when Baba came to Mandalay Hall, after greeting him and being given a bus or two, I said, "Baba, I received your sadra, and I can't tell you how touched I am, Baba. I want to thank you for it." Well, Baba looked very pleased as I started talking, and by the time I finished talking, he looked very much less pleased. And I sort of noted this unconsciously, but didn't think about it. And then towards the end of my stay, again, I was so overwhelmed with all of the love and kindness of Baba as usual. So I brought up as one of the final subjects with Baba to thank him. The second time I said, "Baba, I want to thank you again for the sadra and the wonderful love that you sent with it." And at this point, Baba looked really angry and said nothing. So after Bob had left Mandalay Hall and all of the goodbyes had been said, I said to Harish, "Harish, was it my imagination or was Baba angry with me when I thanked him for the sadra?" And Harish says, "Don't you understand?" And I said, "No, I was so touched. I wanted to thank him for it." And he said, "How can you, Don, thank yourself?" So this indication of the depth of the identity of the avatar with oneself was certainly a great lesson for me. Now I'm going to go over onto another new and separate tape to take up another rather chunky subject, about all of which occurred from roughly 63 to 66, 67. This has to do especially with the drug scene and various of the things that arose in connection with it. Although I had no special interest in the subject, still Baba almost from the start insisted that I know what was going on and in one way or another be somewhat involved with his correspondence and meetings with some of the young people. I forgot to note in the story of the sadra that January 14 is my birthday, and how under the sun the avatar keeps track of a few billion birthdays is really beyond comprehension. But I did want to mention that.